Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut. It's great to have you all back with us. If you're listening in real time, you've just gone through a weekend. I hope a nice one. And it's great to have you here for our first show of the week. With us, this is a great lineup of panelists today. Joining us, Michael Thurman, the CEO of DeKalb County, back again. This time, you're here as a newsmaker as well as an analyst, Mike Thurman. We're going to talk about your proposals to turn Stone Mountain Park into a place that celebrates diversity in a couple of minutes. But thanks for being here.
Thank you, Bill. Always good to be with you.
Former Attorney General of the state of Georgia, Sam Olens, is also with us. Sam, it's your first time as a Political Rewind panelist. You're now with Dentons, the world's largest law firm. It's great to have you here, too.
My pleasure, Bill.
And Heath Garrett, it's Monday. Heath Garrett, Republican strategist, Republican consultant, is here as he almost always is on Monday afternoons. How are you doing, Heath?
It's great to be here, particularly with these two distinguished gentlemen.
Yeah, pretty good group. Jim Galloway, who is usually here, was going to try to get here. He had a meeting that he had to go to at noon or so and cautioned us that he might not be able to get back in time for the show. If he gets here, we will welcome him to the conversation. Let me just remind everybody, you can watch us on Facebook Live. Go to the GPB News Facebook page, and we're up right now. And you can tweet us at PoliticsGPB. And let me also mention, remind everybody, we're on our way to Macon. Thursday night, we will be doing our show in front of a live audience at the Macon School of Medicine Auditorium. We would love to have you join us. Republican Senator John Kennedy, majority leader of the caucus in the state Senate, will be there. Nikki Randall, a former legislator, Democrat, is going to be on the show. Galloway will be down there with me. Admission is free, but go to the gpb.org/community, and you can find information about the show and you can just click, hit the registration button. As I said, it's a free event, but we'd like to get a sense of who all is going to be there. Is that enough announcements so far, Heath?
That was excellent.
Okay, thanks. A couple of quick stories. First, you know, it's interesting. We on the rundown as we put the show together today, Heath, we wanted to talk about what's happening with the mayor of Atlanta. Ever since we had the indictment last week of Mitzi Bickers, who was a major player in city of Atlanta politics.
She was.
Helped win Kasim's first campaign. She was an employee of the city. She is now accused of taking bribes upwards of $2 million and more, according to the feds. And all of this raised questions over the weekend or made people start to think, what the heck is the new mayor of Atlanta going to do to start correcting the problems, because we don't think the indictments are going to end anytime soon.
No, there are lots of rumors out there of more to come. We know we have a very intelligent and aggressive U.S. attorney here in the Northern District. We know that there have been rumors of these types of issues for the last few years around Atlanta, and it's not a great way for a new mayor to launch, you know, her agenda, facing kind of a cleanup scenario of things that she may or may not have had anything to do with. And so it's a real issue to be watched here over the next few weeks.
Well, and one of the reasons I bring it up at the very top of the show, Mike Thurman, is that the a story just moved, AJC just moved a story, that Mayor Bottoms has just told her cabinet, in a cabinet meeting, she wants everyone to turn in their resignations. Now, that's not unusual for a new head of government to say, everybody resign and we'll take you one at a time. But there are those who like to read into this the possibility that this is the first step in sorting out who should stay and who needs to go. Does she have to do this really quickly?
Well, first of all, we should emphasize that Mayor Bottoms has not been implicated in any way.
No.
In any wrongdoing.
No.
And, you know, having gone into difficult situations, she understood what the landscape looked like when she ran for the office, that there were indictments pending, people had pled guilty and so forth. So I have not talked to her directly, but I'm sure she had this on her agenda from day one. She knew that this was an issue she would have to address. She is addressing it. You know, you can do it in different ways. And the challenge, of course, is for her to continue to move forward. And at the end of the day, in 4 years, be able to say to the voters of Atlanta, I found these issues. I analyzed them. I developed a strategy. I implemented it. And we have a more ethical, transparent government now than what I found when I was first sworn in.
Sam, I was trying to remember when you were, of course, the longtime chair of the Cobb County Board, and almost universally won great praise for the way in which you managed the county during your years there. I don't recall that you ever faced a particularly big scandal of the sort, certainly not what they're dealing with the city of Atlanta, but I couldn't recall any major scandal of any sort you had to deal with. Am I wrong?
No, that's correct. I think Cobb County has a history of employees staying a long, long time, being very loyal to the county and to the citizenry, and frankly, providing great services. In contrast, the city of Atlanta is accustomed to each new mayor having a huge rate of turnover. And this simply is going to, in all likelihood, hasten that turnover.
So over the weekend, there were some concerns raised that she wasn't quite moving quickly enough. And she was compared with Shirley Franklin, who stepped in after the mayorship of Bill Campbell, who had had all sorts of ethical issues. And she was able to put together a team to root out the folks she wanted to get rid of very quickly. Is she waiting longer than she should to make it clear she's going to take this situation in hand?
You know, the mayor of Atlanta had a runoff. That naturally causes a delay. I think it's important that she have the time to find out who she's comfortable with and who she's not comfortable with. I think the essence is literally what she does in the next 2 months.
Okay. Heath?
No, I think that's right. I mean, it's not uncommon to have a total transition like she's talking about. It's probably smart to take a couple of months, get to know everybody. But at the same point in time, you have to continue to function as a government. And so hopefully she's got a well-thought-out plan here. But definitely she has to address the ethics and the integrity question, because if you lose the confidence of the public on this, you're not going to be able to govern effectively. And she's got a great chance to clean the slate and move forward.
Okay. Well, we'll watch how all that unfolds. Let's take another story that is just bubbling up in the news. Mark Zuckerberg, of course, is in Washington today. He's preparing to give testimony tomorrow in front of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. And he's already released. He's been having private meetings with members of the United States Senate to talk to them about how he wants to try to rectify these terrible problems that Facebook is dealing with in terms of the use of its data by organizations like Cambridge Analytica. And Sam Olens, you pointed out that they've already released his testimony, and it looks as if he is preparing to be as apologetic as he possibly can. One of the quotes from the testimony is, "We didn't take a broad enough view of our responsibility. That was a big mistake. It was my mistake. I'm sorry. I started Facebook. I run it, and I'm responsible for what happens here." But an apology is not going to be enough, is it, Sam?
So first, let me put on the record that our firm does work for Facebook, so that's clearly on the record. Okay. I think that he's going to make many statements tomorrow and Wednesday that will be viewed as going in the right direction. I think he understands that there's a great opportunity here to not only deal with the emergent issues, but to come out as a leader nationally in this privacy area. Keep in mind, you've got the European Community later in May with their new rule on privacy, what's called the GDPR. And this actually gives Facebook an opportunity to be a global leader in regard to privacy rights.
What does that
rights.
Rule do?
Well, the rule, frankly, makes it much more sacrosanct to protect people's privacy, to include also giving them the option of removing what they previously put on the internet. And as you know, we live in a global world, so if the European Community issues such a rule, no American business that does business in Europe can't follow that rule, so it becomes a global policy. I think you're going to have some significant discussion on what type of information should be accessible, what type of information should be deleted, what steps the user should take to protect their privacy. I think that it's also consistent with what we're seeing on a daily basis with all these companies announcing breaches. Now, Facebook was not a breach, but having said that, the public still has a concern about the safety of their personal information.
And looking at it from a leadership perspective, this is the first real opportunity for him to face a crisis as a leader, an international leader. We know him through the social network. He's a brilliant young kid sitting in a college room, and the next thing you know, he got $1 billion in the bank. But this is a real significant challenge. I give them credit on the rollout or the lead up to his testimony, denying access to Cambridge Analytica and some of the other firms that may have illegally or unethically seized information through Facebook, and just dealing with the trust issue. So far, so good. He can't apologize enough. He's been well prepared to do just that. He'll continue to have to apologize for the foreseeable future. But at the end of the day, to what the Attorney General stated, what specifically are they going to do to ensure that that information is protected through Facebook and other platforms?
Yeah, but I think also, I absolutely, this has got to be more than an apology. It's got to be, here's how we're correcting it. But, you know, Heath, the apology comes late. They've had Sheryl Sandberg out, their COO, on an apology tour this past couple of days. I've seen a couple of interviews with her. And Savannah Guthrie is the one that I saw specifically. And it was a tough interview.
Very tough.
And Guthrie over and over again said, why is it happening so late that you're finally dealing with this issue? And that is, Facebook is going to have to gain the faith, certainly of these members of Congress, and their entire user base, that they truly are committed to solving this problem.
That's right. I mean, I think Zuckerberg being in Washington is not only the story of the week, but I think we're going to look back in a few years and go, this is really the story of part of the decade. It's of all the tech giants coming to grips with the reality, and more importantly, their consumers finally waking up to the reality of how much of our data, right, is out there and being used in different ways. The apology is a little bit late from a crisis management standpoint, from a PR standpoint, but I think they're trying to get their hands around it. These companies have basically run unfettered in the U.S. regulatory environment. They've been facing this in Europe. Europe's a little further ahead than the U.S. on these types of environments, but you've got to apologize. You've got to earn back your consumer confidence. Facebook's in a unique position, though. There's almost nowhere else to go and get a similar experience, and so they're kind of banking on the reality that your other option is Instagram, which they own. So I think that we're at a very important point in tech development history, and how the consumer is going to go with it. And Zuckerberg's testimony is something we ought to all pay attention to in the next couple of days.
You know, I was just going to say, let's keep in mind that President Obama sought to pass legislation in this area. It was dead on arrival.
Yeah.
So you're going to have 2 days of hearings. It's still to be demonstrated later whether Congress can agree on passage of such legislation.
Absolutely. I think I'm correct in telling you all this. In fact, I'm pretty sure I am, that when Zuckerberg goes up and testifies tomorrow, we're going to carry his testimony on the GPB News, on one of our websites, probably GPB News, but we're going to have it in a form that you can watch it online, because we at GPB think it's pretty important stuff. Why don't we do this? Mike Thurman, we're looking forward to talking to you about Stone Mountain Park and yes, your new effort to change the whole dynamic of how people see that park. Why don't we take our first break, get it out of the way, come back, and begin that conversation. You're listening to Political Rewind.
On the next Fresh Air...
Oh, what a beautiful morning!
Terry talks about Rodgers and Hammerstein with Todd Purdom. His new book explores the creative partnership that transformed musical theater. He'll talk about shows that didn't work and the stories behind their great successes. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 here on GPB.
GPB Spring Fund Drive starts soon, but the time to give is now. Your contribution at gpb.org before the drive starts will do twice the good. You'll support the programs you enjoy, and your gift will be part of our challenge fund to inspire others to join you in supporting GPB. You'll also have a chance to win a St. Simons Island getaway to the King and Prince Beach and Golf Resort. Please go to gpb.org and click donate, and thanks.
We're back on Political Rewind. Great group sitting around the table. Mike Thurman, CEO of DeKalb County. Heath Garrett, Republican strategist, who has worked with all of the top Republicans in Georgia. Johnny Isaacson being your number one guy, I think it's safe to say, isn't it?
And our good friend Sam Owens.
And Did he work on your campaigns?
I'm responsible for his house.
and the lack of hair.
I should have realized that. And that is, that's right. And that is Sam Owens, former Attorney General of the state of Georgia and former president of Kennesaw State University. Now back in the law business, and we're glad to have you on the show, Sam. Michael Thurman, you've made two speeches, I think. I know now. I'm correct in saying about how you want to try, as CEO of DeKalb County, to recover Stone Mountains as a, how would I, well, I'm going to let you describe it. What do you want, how would you, what's your thesis statement for what you're trying to do with a symbol that many people in the state find very offensive?
I love Stone Mountain. It literally sits in my backyard. It is the most visited tourist attraction in the state. People of all races, colors, and creeds, backgrounds come there for the natural beauty, for the attractions, and it has been that way. And the truth, Bill, is that by their participation, their feet really have redefined Stone Mountain from what it was in, say, 2015, when the Martin Ku Klux Klan was basically birthed on the top of that mountain. And so what I would hope to do is to create a broader, more comprehensive narrative that looks at our history. I'm also an avid researcher and writer of the history of the Civil War. The Civil War is the war whose climax redefined freedom, as Lincoln said at Gettysburg, brought a new birth of freedom to this nation. And I'm one who believes that studying that war, the issues associated with it, helps to enrich what it means to be an American. It's the seminal moment in the history of our nation where America really was hanging in the balance, whether or not we would be two nations or one. And it is something that we could all rally to. And I believe that Stone Mountain, properly presented with a more comprehensive, complete narrative, can continue to be a place that brings people together as opposed to taking people apart.
You talk about that at a time when we have a Democratic candidate for governor who has, at least early in her campaign, Stacey Abrams, proposed sandblasting the Confederate images on the bas reliefs that are carved into the mountain, where when Bill Stevens, the president of Stone Mountain, proposed that we put a bell tower on top of the mountain to honor Dr. King, Let Freedom Ring.
And from Senator Emanuel Jones, most recently.
It's back there. But when Bill Stevens proposed it, it got shot down pretty quickly, and there were a lot of people who were very upset that he would want to try to use that symbol, that mountain, to in some way honor Dr. King. What's changed that you think is going to allow you to move forward this time with a new proposal?
Well, one in particular, we need to separate the idea of Confederate history or Civil War history from the lost cause. Much of the pushback and anger and frustration that you receive from African American and others is not about Civil War history. It's about the substitution of lost cause mythology for Civil War history. I would argue that in its original incantation, that carving was placed there not as a Civil War monument, but it was a monument to the lost cause. They're two really separate things. What we need to do is to replace the lost cause mythology with Civil War history, which I think everyone can benefit from.
Sam, give us your thoughts on this.
I think that's called leadership. You know, the CEO is 100% correct. We need to not deny history. You know, similar to Nazi Germany, there's no gain in trying to hide what occurred, but you can always use these as educational moments. And I think the CEO is trying to do that, and I think he deserves a lot of praise for it.
You know, this is exactly what I think we need. As I've said on the show, I think just 2 weeks ago, if we had more Michael Thurmans and Sam Olens and Johnny Isaacsons and Andrew Youngs talking like this around racial issues in the South, but also nationwide, we'd be coming up with more solutions. I commend the CEO for what he's trying to do here. I think it was Michael Thurman who said, you know, history has to be additive, right? We have to add to the history and not delete from it. Because if we delete from the Holocaust or we delete for the racial injustice in the history of our nation, then we're doomed to repeat it by not having the next generations understand what happened all around the South and at Stone Mountain. And I think if you do exactly what Mr. Thurman is suggesting, you put historical facts and context around that mountain, you can maintain the history, but teach what the lost cause mythology is, right? Make sure people understand why that carving was there, but put a bell tower on top, right, so it completes the history. There's a reason why Martin Luther King talked about Stone Mountain in his greatest speech, the I Have a Dream speech, right, and mentioned it there. So I think there's so much positive that can come out of this, and just commend the CEO and the chairman of the county for being a facilitator of uniting folks on this rather than what we see sometimes in the national media, which is everybody dividing.
Yes, what was the role of women, white and black, slave and free? And it's not just white guys on horses shooting each other, right? Women play an important role. African-Americans, slave and free, played an important role in that war. 200,000 black men, 90% of them who were formerly enslaved in the South, actually went to war as well and fought. White unionists in Georgia. Georgia was a hotbed in the southern states for union sentiment in North Georgia.
Yeah, David Ralston, the Speaker of the House, talks about the fact that his family up there in Union County fought for, they were unionists.
Yeah, it's a reason it's called Union County. I mean, you know, so it's much more complex than not just all white people in the South supported slavery. It just wasn't true. I mean, it is not true. I've written, and you know, Bill, about James Oglethorpe, the father of Georgia. My new book talks about him as the first abolitionist. Abolitionism was born in Georgia, sure, primarily by the father of Georgia. So these are stories that can be told. I talked about at Stone Mountain, there's a covered bridge that was built in 1891 in Athens. It's now at Stone Mountain. When I was growing up traveling under that bridge, I didn't know that it was built by a black man. So those are the type of things that we can all benefit from, learn from.
So what does that mean in practicality? Are you supportive of Emanuel Jones, who's now got the signatures, I think, of most of the black caucus in the legislature for supporting the idea of a bell tower on the summit of Stone Mountain? But you're talking about, symbols are fine, but you're also talking about where do you show the history? Do you build a new little museum on the site? What's your practical plan for moving forward?
Well, and he even, Attorney General, you know, I'm a former school superintendent. I think it would be a great location for students from all over Georgia to come and learn more about this really critical moment in the history of our state. It culminated a 250-year struggle. And so actually more interactive, more informational, more educational. Because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. It's really not about us. It's about the generations that come behind us.
Sam, you live in today still and were chair of a county that still struggles with its Confederate past and where your community is not all on the same page about what to do about it, yes?
Yeah, but let's go back to one quick second, right, and then I'll get to that to make the CEO's point. When I was AG, I had a history talk. When the colony started under Oglethorpe, there was no slavery. It was England that pushed back on him. But when Oglethorpe came here, there was no slavery, no rum, no Catholics, and no lawyers. That's why I put it in my talk, no lawyers. But, you know, so Oglethorpe has been shortchanged quite a bit, and, yes, and the CEO is 100% correct in that regard. We had a matter recently with naming of a park, and the county commission couldn't agree on the name, whether it should be a generic description or Johnson's River Line, one of the generals. And I thought that was really a lost opportunity because just as the CEO is doing, you can have a historic marker without creating the negative feeling among many members of your community that Johnson's Riverline for the whole name of the park would do. And I think at times we are short in leaders, and we're short in the idea of you can provide history and compassion at the same time.
All right, but Heath, what if you were out there, what if you had a candidate in DeKalb County in a legislative race, a Republican candidate? What would you tell that candidate about whether they can afford to embrace Michael Thurman's thoughts or whether they have to be careful with their base?
Well, fortunately, I've worked with the folks we're describing here, a Johnny Isaacson, a Sam Olens, a Chris Carr, who have, and all my other clients, have shown political courage when it was necessary to do things that might not have been politically expedient in the Republican primary at first blush. What I've always found, particularly around these types of issues, is it's a very, very small group of vocal people, either on the far, far right or on the far, far left, that are stirring up these issues. And if you just have the political courage, you'll be surprised that even in a Republican primary where you think you've got a couple of vocal folks that are all for, quote, Southern heritage, they really don't represent the overwhelming majority of either the primary voters or the general election. So I would be advising them to do it. It may not always be at first the what viewed as the easiest thing to do. But Sam Olens is living proof in a county like Cobb County, or as a first attorney general of the Jewish faith in the South, that if you have the courage to run and stay true to your convictions, you can survive the raw politics. You just have to be a little tougher.
So, you know, I'm interested, Mike. I've mentioned on the show once before that I with some regularity, have ridden my bike on Sunday mornings out to Stone Mountain and ridden around the park a few times, which, by the way, is an exhausting ride. But
I'm proud of you, Bill.
But it's but obviously, the majority of the park goers that I see, and I know this to be true of the whole experience, are African American. Have you had teams out doing any kind of surveys with park goers to see how they feel about that granite monument to the past and the notion of trying to do something to honor Dr. King out there?
Anecdotally, I've talked to hundreds of people, black and white, people in their heart. We really want to work together. We really see that it's a park, 3,000 plus acres? It's large enough to hold our entire history. Yeah. And what we have to do, though, is be respectful of other people's history. See, if you honor and celebrate your history but disrespect the history of other people, whether it's race, color, creed, then you are not truly understanding the significance of heritage and history.
Okay.
I'm just convinced, and I'll say this and I'll stop. This is a unique moment, not just for DeKalb County, but I think this issue around Stone Mountain has been a toxic one for the state of Georgia. It's time to move on. Look, it's no accident that the Russians used a march, used a demonstration in Stone Mountain to ferment disorder and violence and distrust in our community.
A white supremacist rally.
Right.
Yeah.
They used it.
Yeah.
They saw that as a vulnerability, not just for people in DeKalb, but for the United States of America. That's why we have to do better. That's why we have to move from this point, because we can't allow this to continue to fester within our midst.
Could this be a model for how the communities around the state handle their issues with the Confederacy?
Absolutely. It goes right to the heart of what Andrew Young and Michael Thurman have been talking about, as a model of how do you unify and reconcile rather than divide and fertilize a distrust and hate.
You know, when I was AG, President Obama invited me to the White House for discussion on law enforcement and race relations. And I wrote a column to the AJC about implicit bias. You know, when you have Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina that was stopped 7 times in a year by D.C. police when he's wearing a suit and driving in a nice car, we have to acknowledge there's a problem in America. If it isn't now the time for whites and blacks and people of all shapes and sizes, creed, ethnic groups, to come forward and say it's time for us to all treat each other properly, it doesn't matter if you lose the election. You got to do what's right for our country.
Mike, to finish out this part of the conversation, what are the next steps? What should we look for in terms of practical application of your thinking about this issue?
We must commit ourselves. A good friend of mine, Ed Benson, anybody know Athens, Georgia, know Mr. Benson Baker at Holiday Inn? He passed. I spoke at his funeral. last week. And one of the things he always emphasized, that the most important characteristic talent that a leader must possess, is the ability to listen. If we would just stop to listen, not to convince, not to speechify or articulate, but just to listen to what people have to say, particularly people who may disagree with you. And I think out of that, we began to learn and build consensus and to move forward. The fact that Mr. Garrett and Mr. Owens have stated on this show that, yes, you know, we can have a broader narrative. Bill Stevens have said it. I've heard it on multiple occasions from multiple members of the Republican and Democratic Party. That in and of itself is the major step forward for this state.
All right. I think around this table, you've got a lot of agreement. Are we going to see anything practical, specific? Is Stone Mountain going to look different? Are you supportive of the bell tower? Have you suggested to Stacey Abrams she stop suggesting they ought to sandblast the images of the Confederate leaders?
I've not talked to Leader Abrams. I'm one member on the association, so I have one vote. The key will be is to build some consensus and a majority on the Stone Mountain Memorial Association so that we can move forward.
Okay. Fair enough. We're going to keep watching how you deal with that. And we should say that it does appear that there is going to be an effort to go forward with the bell tower if the Black Caucus is behind
it. Well, I want the bell tower plus.
I understand that's not the end of it.
Yeah, that's not the end of it. I just think it needs to be more. Along with the bell tower, to understand why Dr. King said what he said.
Okay, fair enough. Let's talk for a few minutes about the gubernatorial race. We saw financial disclosure reports were due late last week. We've now taken a look at where things stand. First of all, Heath, it is fair to say that all of the candidates for governor, together as a group, the candidates for governor have raised a boatload of cash. Yes?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just indicative of how expensive it is to run statewide in the state of Georgia. We sometimes think of ourselves as a smaller state than we actually are. We're the eighth largest state in population. We're probably the seventh largest economy by state in the country. And the Atlanta media market is extremely expensive. And so it's one of the most expensive in the nation. So in order to run, you've got to have money to be on television and on radio.
Yeah, my last election was $650,000 a week to do TV in the state.
$650. How much TV did that buy you? Was that
a lot less than a gubernatorial candidate?
He knows what he's talking about because he beat me in 2010 when I ran for the U.S. Senate.
That's right. I have
great respect for this man when I ran for the U.S. Senate, but it's extremely expensive in these days and times. And, you know, the good old days about pressing the flesh and, you know, all of that's important. But if you can't get up and stay up on TV, it's very, very tough.
So I want to talk about that just for a minute. I'm going to divert from it because I do want to talk about what the figures show us about who seems to have the momentum right now. But let me go with that for just a second. I will tell you that as a longtime television reporter, I used to find it rather amusing and I thought really ironic and probably inappropriate that news organizations, TV in this case, would spend a lot of time criticizing candidates for the fact they spend all their time out raising money, talking about the huge amounts of money that go into running for a race like attorney general, governor, when what they were doing was raising money to be on your air.
Well, it was always true. It was true of print advertising before that, and now it's digital and television, and absolutely the case. And, of course, as a constitutionalist, which I know all four of us are, the First Amendment, the way the Supreme Court has interpreted it, has said, you know, money is the speech in America today, and it gives you the ability to get out there and get your political speech in the different mediums. And if anything, it's getting more expensive because you have to purchase print advertising, you have to purchase digital advertising on Facebook and on Google, talking about Facebook, and you also have to be on television and radio, and who knows what the next medium is. But it is unfortunate that candidates do have to spend as much time as they do raising money. In an ideal world, they'd be spending more time coming up with solutions like CEO Thurman just described for us, but it's the reality. It's like a nuclear arms race, and the candidates with the most money tend to mean they've got a lot of support, and they do well in campaigns.
Sam, the figures for Republican candidates for governor show us what we already kind of see when we look at the internal polls of some campaigns and the couple of polls by outside organizations. Casey Cagle has an enormous advantage right now in fundraising. He's raised about $7 million as of this reporting period. And I think Brian Kemp, is that right? Kemp comes closest to him. He's got about, I'm looking through my figures here, about $3 million. And Cagle still got $4.5 million cash on hand with plenty of time. Although we have to remind people, this election's only about 7 weeks away, this primary.
So, look, if I were Casey Cagle, I'd make believe he didn't have any opposition, and I'd be on TV with positive commercials. I think now is the time for him to demonstrate leadership and to come across as Georgia's future leader. I think if he gets in the dirt with the three people or so that are fighting for second, it will hurt him. When you're that far ahead, act like a leader.
Well, I was going to shift to the Democrats, but I'll stay with
the
Republicans.
No, go ahead, shift to the Democrats.
One of the things about Georgia politics statewide, particularly at the gubernatorial level, front runners are not always the end runners. You know, it's always interesting how that plays out in Georgia. You can go all the way back to Bo Ginn. I think Casey Cagle is in
You must have been about 2 years old for that election.
No, I was out there actually working, trying to get some votes. No,
he's a historian. He's a historian.
No, I remember Bo Ginn because he walked out on the wing of this big airplane, remember?
Yeah.
And it was all over after that. So what you have to do is avoid losing. The thing about being a front runner, and all of us have been front runners, is that that's a scary place to be. I'm just telling you, maybe the scariest of all places to be, because you're just one misstatement or one step away from enlivening your opponent.
All right. Well, before we turn to the Democrat, I should ask one last question about Republicans. Is Cagle positioned at this point with all the money he has on hand, with the money he can raise continually, is he positioned to win this thing without a runoff, or is that crazy talk?
I think that's really tough. No matter how much money, he does have a huge fundraising advantage over his other opponents. None of them got enough traction and have not been able to spend it early enough to start taking him down, so to speak, in political parlance. He's definitely running closer to the 40s and upper 40s right now, it would seem, with where he's headed, than he was 6 months ago with the cash that he has. It looks like the other candidates are cannibalizing each other on fundraising and on that second spot. Brian Kemp's name recognition, his grassroots network, and his money should put him in the second place. But all these second, third, fourth, fifth place folks, they have to decide, are they attacking Casey, or are they going to attack somebody ahead of them so they can get into the runoff? Yeah. If you're not in the runoff, you have no chance. And attacking Casey may not get you into the runoff. So they've got an interesting choice they're going to make that we're going to have to watch play out over the next few weeks.
All right. Before we have to get to another break, Michael, let's go back to what you started to talk about. Stacey Abrams, Stacey Evans, the Democratic candidates for governor. Abrams is really, she's raised three times as much money as Stacey
Evans.
Yes, very
impressive.
What does that tell us about the viability of Stacey Evans' campaign?
Well, it says that Stacey Abrams has a national fundraising network in place, and that she is leveraging to her advantage in this race, which is really just phenomenal when you think about it. But at the end of the day, and I know it's politics, it's Georgia, so it's about race at the end of the day. Always a subtext of politics. And can Stacey Evans win a Democratic primary or defeat a well-funded, highly qualified African-American female candidate? So that's what it's going to come down to. You hate to say it, it's not that to me, but that's how a large swath of the Democratic Party of voters are looking at it.
So let me have a slight disagreement with the CEO. In the last numbers, you saw where Andy Young wrote a check to Stacey Evans. You saw Larry Gellerstedt write a check to Stacey Evans.
One of the most significant business leaders in Metro Atlanta, right, and beyond.
There's a lot of rumor that the new mayor of Atlanta will be supporting Stacey Evans and not Stacey Abrams.
Because Evans supported her when she ran for mayor. Go ahead.
So you may very well have a lot of the historic Democrat leadership of the city of Atlanta supporting Stacey Evans as compared to Stacey Abrams. which could frankly make the race tighter, because if they do one heck of a good turnout in Atlanta, Atlanta's a lot of votes.
I'm not saying that Evans will not generate African-American votes. It's, can she generate enough to win in a Democratic primary? Sherry Boston in DeKalb is supporting Evans.
Great lady.
Great lady. I'm sure you know her. So, but that's the test. It's not that it can't happen, but the question is, will it happen? And will Evans be able to generate enough votes to overcome the advantage that Evans might have?
Sam, we haven't had the chance to ask you this question on the show. What I've asked other panelists is this. Stacey Evans is trying to rebuild the Yellow Dog Democrat formula, getting white, middle, and rural voters back into the Democratic column. Is that really doable in the era of Donald Trump?
Yeah, I think it is. And look, I like both Stacey's. I worked well with both Stacey's as AG. I think that if the Republican candidate comes out tarnished after a runoff, a Stacey Evans could be a surprise. I think a Stacey Abrams has a much harder shot getting those independent and suburban voters.
Okay.
I think Republicans would be really remiss if they discounted either one of the Stacey's. The Democratic Party is seeing a little bit of re-energization here in Georgia. I think it's a healthy primary as long as it doesn't become purely racially divisive in the Democratic side. And Republicans think, oh, we're just going to win because it's 2018 and discount either one of these ladies and what they're going to be capable of doing at the state and national level is a mistake.
All right. We got to get a break in. As we go to break, Angela Ford tweets to us, I could listen to Mike Thurman all day. He speaks truth. And what we all should be doing to deal with race, not only know your history, but be open to other people's history, too. Maria Pegler tweets, thank you for such a great conversation where people are listening, she says in all caps, to each other and asking for solutions. John Alvey says, all for a bell tower honoring MLK and his work. Keep everything at Stone Mountain now and add more. Tell the whole story. And we've got a number of comments on our Facebook Live page where people are watching us from all over the state, Statesboro, Smyrna. I could go on and on. A lot of the comments on Facebook Live have to do with Mark Zuckerberg. If we get a chance after the break, I'll get to some of them as well. But let's get our second break of the show out of the way and come back to finish things off on Political Rewind.
It's not every day you have the chance to inspire someone else and have your gift go even further for a cause that's important to you. But today is the day. Support GPB now at gpb.org, and your contribution will be part of our challenge fund to encourage others to join you in supporting GPB during our spring fund drive. With other sources of funding in question, take this opportunity now to inspire others to join you in support of public radio. That's gpb.org, and thanks.
We're back. Jim Galloway was not able, clearly, to get here. And because Jim isn't here, we mentioned at the very, very top of the show that we wanted to talk a little more about this Sinclair Broadcasting story. And I think even more interestingly, the fact that the Denver Post yesterday had a series of columns and an editorial blasting the owner of their own newspaper, a hedge fund back east, because they're taking apart the newsroom. And what we were going to talk about, and we still will, is between Sinclair and what's going on with organizations like the Denver Post, the question is, where will you turn for local news in the future, which has been an important part of what the news business is. But without Galloway here, it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to do that today. So we'll put that off for another time. Let's just talk quickly. Mike, let me start with you, if I may. We had more of those town hall meetings this weekend. We had on Saturday at least two that I know of, one downtown in Atlanta at the Rialto Theater that John Lewis went to. These are the anti-gun rallies by students. And they were not well attended. According to the reporting, they had very few people show up. Is that just because it's starting to be spring in Atlanta? Is this movement going to peter out?
The students made a profound and, I think, lasting impact on the psychology and the politics of this nation. One of the things we've learned is that once young people, voters, actually cast a vote, whether it's Republican or Democrat, that's a vote that they'll continue to cast throughout the remainder of their lives unless there's some major tectonic shift. So a commitment was made on that issue. Now, whether or not the change occurs in November 18 or 19, these young people have committed themselves to a philosophy. What also changed was the movement grew. It was not just the horrible shootings in the schools, but you also saw particularly low-income minority kids who deal with gun violence on a daily basis also speaking out and saying enough is enough. There is a growing, and we can ignore it or not, but a growing consensus around this nation, left and right and independent, saying that we have to remove weapons of mass destruction from the hands of people who are either mentally ill or people who want to do damage. We respect the Second Amendment, but clearly we cannot allow this carnage to continue.
Heath, is the Republican Party going to struggle to get young people to vote Republican as they come of age?
Well, I've talked many times on this show about the generational gap that the Republican Party and the brand has to address over the next coming decades. I still think that the jury's out on whether this issue, guns, is one of those issues. I do think that there are some other issues that are probably still more important. I think we are starting to see what I maybe not optimistically, but realistically predicted a few weeks ago, which is the question goes from the emotion of the moment of what happened. There's universal agreement we've got to do more on school safety. There's universal agreement that we got to do something about removing guns from the hands of those who are mentally impaired or have a propensity to want to do this. But immediately everybody goes back into their corners. And I haven't seen any real movement in the nation. I really think we're 50-50 on this as to whether or not the proposals of true gun control do it. And there is this little pesky thing called the Second Amendment. If we say that you're going to be able to have pornography and say anything under the First Amendment, you don't move to the Second Amendment and go, oh, but we're gonna compromise there on that constitutional amendment too. There are some really challenging issues which are going to hurt some of this movement as it moves forward.
I would just simply add that I'm disappointed that both in the state and in our country, we haven't gotten further with regard to mental illness. Everyone claims they're on the same page, but they can't seem to pass the legislation. The Georgia law, 5 years involuntary hospitalization, makes no sense to me. That ought to be a statement from a doctor, not an artificial time frame. And I think it's unfortunate that both our state and our country haven't been able to go further in that area.
And, Bill, the change will come from the right and not the left.
Nixon in China.
Yeah, absolutely. Or Brandon Beach or Kevin Turner, yeah. You know, with mass transit. Or even Trump on trade and tariffs. It will have to come from the right. There will have to be a Republican leader who actually takes the position of courage, runs, and gets elected and reelected. Then it will change.
And well, we may have a test on that. You know, Governor Scott has now said he's going to run for the United States Senate in Florida, having been a champion of.
Yeah, he passed right after Parkland was able to pass probably
that's
the
true. Great point.
Yeah, the most significant gun laws that we've seen anywhere, certainly in a Republican state. Interesting.
It'll be a good experiment.
Real quick. From Facebook Live, we have people saying, Juanita Butler says, I love today's discussion and panel. I truly was one decided about Stone Mountain, which was dumb on my part because we do enjoy it. So it's time to lead Georgia and our divided country in the direction of educated inclusion. Thanks to you all for talking about this. Larry Lowe says, Stacey Evans, is stuck in 2014. The Democratic Party has moved on vastly since then. So those are just some of the comments we're getting from people around the state. Thank you for that. Before we go, we are once again celebrating. Celebrating is absolutely the wrong word. We are once again marking a 50th anniversary. It was 50 years ago today that here in Atlanta, the funeral of Martin Luther King Jr. was held. Here's Ralph Abernathy at the service.
We gather here this morning in one of the darkest hours in the history of the black people of this nation, and in one of the darkest hours in the history of all mankind.
He has shown us how to live, and that he who lives for the moment will surely die. Yet he who lives for eternity and dedicates his life to those ultimate principles of truth, justice, and love, as this man has done, will never die.
Mike, there are some people who, when Obama was president, said, thank goodness, the dream of Dr. King has moved us to this point in history. And the critics of the Trump administration would say, what happened to the dream? Where are we headed right now? Is the dream still alive 50 years after his funeral?
Absolutely. A young man who grew up in a sharecropper shack with no indoor plumbing, to sit here and speak to you all on statewide radio, it's alive. And one of the things I've said is that the observance of the 50th anniversary should also be a rededication to finish the unfinished work. It was that a dream. It wasn't necessarily a reality. So what we have to do in our walks of life, wherever we are, whatever we do, is dedicate ourselves to fulfilling that unfinished work of creating a beloved community, whether it's in Warner Robins or Augusta or at Stone Mountain, where people of all races, colors, and creeds, Jew and Gentile, can sit down as brothers and sisters. That was a dream, and that's what we need to be about.
Heath, you want to take about 20 seconds and reflect?
Well, I think that's exactly right. Growing up in Albany, Georgia, where it wasn't until the mid-80s that my school was really, truly integrated, and being post-desegregation baby, our children sit down and read Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech in January of every year. And my 8-year-old goes, well, it sounds like some of the dream has come true because of who's in his classroom and who he plays with on the school ground. But my 15-year-old said, but not all of it. And so I think that's a real indication that we've got, that it's alive, but we've got a lot of work to do.
Sam? Amen.
You know, I recently read the 20th anniversary of Dr. Beverly Tatum's book, Why Do Black Children Sit Together in the Cafeteria? Yeah. I'd encourage everyone to read that book. It provides a lot of guidance to move our country together.
It is. I'm really glad you mentioned Beverly Tatum's book. It is a wonderful book. Did you say you have a new book coming out?
Well, it's a book on James Oglethorpe.
Okay. Well, we give you a chance.
So that he can claim his
rightful
place.
We talked about your book on Friday, and everybody wanted to know more about
it. Well, the Attorney General mentioned Georgia is the only one of the original colonies where slavery was prohibited.
All right. We're completely out of time. Thank you, Heath Garrett, Sam Olens, Michael Thurman. Thank you all for listening and for your terrific comments on the show today. I'm Bill Nygut. We'll see you again for another Political Rewind on Wednesday.